Welcome to ACC Nation. We continue our Voices of Football previews with the play-by-play voice of Wake Forest, Stan Cotton, and former quarterback and color analyst for the Pittsburgh Panthers, Pat Bostic. Both interviews are coming up in just a few moments. Some noteworthy polls out the CBS 130, which includes four ACC teams and Notre Dame. Will and I take a look at that later in the show. ACC men's and women's soccer rocked the United Soccer Coaches preseason top 25 with seven selections on both sides. That includes the top-ranked women's team in Florida State, while ACC coaches have picked number two, North Carolina, to take the conference. Pitt has been chosen to win the ACC Volleyball Championship. You can read more about that story along with the latest AVCA preseason poll at accnation.net. Some of the other stories you may want to check out on site, Virginia Elena Carter and Jillian Shriver are the ACC nominees for NCAA Woman of the Year honors. And we offer up a few recipes for beer ice cream. I did my research with Häagen-Dazs Stout Chocolate Pretzel, of which I give a big thumbs up to. Fried chicken, mac and cheese, peas with mushrooms, cantaloupe. Because you were asking why it sounded like I needed to go to bed when we were talking before this segment started. Well, that's why. Because I had a nice hearty Sunday meal.
And it's, I hear you there.
Kicking in, man. Woo.
Got a nice full belly, eh?
I do. I'll tell you. Nothing like having that sort of... I wanted mashed potatoes, but, the route to it was not conducive to... So, mac and cheese it was. Not a bad choice.
I like mac and cheese.
Yeah. Kept the lady of the house happy.
Yes. So that's what's most important, right?
It is. Very much so. Yes, indeed. So you've been hitting some beer, and I also hit some beer. So this has been a beer weekend.
Yeah. We were talking. I was grilling tonight for dinner, and while I was drinking, I was drinking a collaboration between a couple of local Minneapolis breweries called Inbound and Broken Clock. So I guess it's only right twice a day. But they brewed a beer called Shot Clock, which would be perfect to distribute in Charlottesville.
Indeed.
Yeah. We got to drink it within 30 seconds. Otherwise, it's a violation. But, pretty solid little like a hazy American IPA.
That sounds good. Mm-hmm. I went to Triple Crossing. That's someplace that you and I and Sammy and Joe went to when you were visiting. And they were having a 50 years of brewing in Richmond, which was fun because I sampled a nice New England juicy IPA. Also had, we stopped by there, Blackheath Meadery came by and joined the crowd, and they were serving up something that was based on rose petals, and that was
interesting.
Yeah, it was.
When we were down there visiting you, we were told you that there wasn't even a meadery up here, but one just actually opened up.
Bravo! Recently, yeah, very cool. Have you gone?
No, it's relatively new, and it's on the other side of the Twin Cities. I just haven't made it up there yet.
Yeah, well, let them get through some of the early iterations.
Yeah, I'll maybe wait until like next spring or something to get it.
So they have it down pat.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Always fun to go out and sample. And now a look at what to expect from Dave Clawson this fall. We continue the Voices of Football preview with Stan Cotton, the voice of the Wake Forest Demon Deacons. We'll jump feet first into things. There's two equally qualified candidates in Newman and Hartman to lead the offense. Does Dave Clawson have his quarterback?
Yeah, I'm just not sure he knows who it is. He knows he's got a couple to pick from, and I guess that's a good thing to have. But, it's an odd situation, really, Jim. I mean, you've got, Jamie Newman, who finished the year. Nothing less than heroic, just what he was able to do. And Sam Hartman had a terrific first half. So you've got two guys who've proven they can play and play well, and that's what you have to pick from. So I think probably most coaches would rather have a guy that's maybe head and shoulders above the other. But I don't think that's the case at Wake. And so Wake will adapt to that. And you know, if recent history means anything, it'll mean that, you know, Wake Forest will need more than one quarterback. That's been the case the last few seasons, and I would anticipate, in all likelihood, given the amount of hits that Wake quarterbacks take because of the offense they run, that that'll be the case again in 2019. So it's good to have two that are proven players and that, you know, they can get the job done.
Let's stay in the backfield. Cade Kearney, Christian Beal-Smith. Kearney cranked out an exciting 1,000-yard season last year. Smith made his mark as well. Two questions. One, who's coming up behind them on the roster, and how will the running game play out in this offense?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I hesitate to pick somebody. You know, I think it's going to be Cade Kearney's ball to run with first. And, you know, you mentioned Beal-Smith. Cade Kearney is an interesting guy. I mean, he's deceptively quick and has more speed than I think most people realize. But at the same time, he's kind of an old throwback in a way. He could easily play fullback way back in the day. I mean, he's got that kind of strength, that kind of approach to the game. I mean, he'd rather run over the top of you than run around you. And he's got the girth and the strength to do that. But at the same time, he can step outside and take the ball a long distance. He's, again, he's got more speed. And Beal-Smith, very quick. I think he's an intuitive player. And he'll be right there in the mix as well. Behind that, you know, the thing that Wake has done the Deacs have been able to do under Dave Clawson over the last several years is get players ready. And there are a lot of names on this team, Jim, that people may not know, may not recognize, haven't seen before, that are capable players just waiting to get their turn. And so we'll see how it shakes out at running back, but I would anticipate that Cade Kearney is going to have a terrific year.
With the departure of multi-threat Greg Dortch early to the New York Jets and also Alex Bachman, there are some interesting names in the wide receiving core. One is a former quarterback Hinton, also Robertson and Surratt. Plus, coming off an injury from last year is the 6'5" Scotty Washington, who can give defenses fits with his length. There's also a couple of tight ends. What do you see ahead for this group?
Well, you mentioned the exit of Dortch, which had a chance to go make some money playing the NFL, and most players who come into your program at an ACC school want to play pro ball, and so Dortch is off to the NFL, and now you gotta find a way to replace that. And you know, you mentioned Hinton. Kendall Hinton's the replacement for him at slot receiver. And Hinton's got an interesting background. Obviously, has started for Wake Summit quarterback, has made the switch to wide receiver. And when he's going to be really dangerous, Jim, is when he gets the ball in his hands. And as a matter of fact, when he does that, he might be even more effective than Dortch could be. Dortch had the crazy ability to get open, to get behind defenses, all of that. But Hinton is just as good, if not better. I think you could make that argument with the ball in his hands. He was a capable passer at quarterback, but just a very effective runner. And so I'm excited to see him in that slot spot. And if the Deacs can get the ball in his hands a lot, I think he can do a lot with it. You mentioned Surratt. He is just a fantastic athlete. He's got a really high football IQ, very talented. We know his bloodlines, his brother obviously at North Carolina, and Surratt's one of those guys who was equally as good at basketball. Some would argue maybe even more of a prospect in basketball than football, but certainly Wake fans are glad that he's on the football field, and I expect him to have a terrific year. Scotty Washington, if he can stay healthy, you mentioned his length, he can hurt defenses a lot of different ways. So even though Dortch is gone, Bachman is gone, Wake's very deep at wide receiver. And I mentioned, you know, the development of Wake players at a lot of different positions. I think that's another one where the Deacs have a lot of names that people might not be familiar with right now that here in 2-3 months they could be.
Everything we've talked about so far, Stan, won't go very far without a solid offensive line to open holes for the running attack and give the quarterback time to find those receivers. The one thing that helps here is the high tempo that keeps defenses on their toes. There's three guys I see that were returning, and there's room for a few new faces as well. Is everything gelling there and coming together for the offensive line?
I think so. I think, you know, Wake feels pretty good about the development, and that's, again, we keep using that word, the development of players. And I think, you know, early last year when Justin Huron went out at tackle, that was a huge blow to the Wake Forest offense. But now he gets to come back, and, you know, this is 2019. He was supposed to be gone already. So you have a guy like that who, you know, is a terrific player to anchor that group, then you feel really good about it. And so, you know, Wake's got enough players there who've played enough snaps, I think, for Dave Clawson and his staff to feel really good about that spot. But there are other players who've come along, who've waited their turn just like other positions, and they're ready to go. So I think, you know, even though Wake Forest loses two, three guys who were critical to Wake's success over the last couple of years, they do have plenty of players with enough experience to feel comfortable with that spot as well. So I think, you know, when you look to 2019, I think it's going to be a season offensively, much like the last two, where Wake Forest uses that tempo, scores a lot of points, and has a good chance to win most games at its end.
You mentioned Dave Clawson just a moment ago. He seems to be a master at building programs and bringing success. His track record confirms this. He recently signed a contract extension through 2026. That seems like he's a good fit for both the school and the coach. You've been around a coach long enough to give us your impression. So tell us a little bit about Dave Clawson, the coach and the man in the community.
Well, I mean, I think Dave has just really settled into his spot in Winston-Salem and at Wake Forest. He's a perfect fit. He really is for this program. He's an academic guy, came, you know, from Williams College, and I think, and he's been at other places, obviously, prior to Wake, other academic schools, and he just kind of gets it, I think, Jim, with regard to what type of young man it takes to excel both academically and on the football field. And he has said, you know, Wake Forest is going to be, and here's that word again, a development program where you get players that maybe some other schools didn't offer, that they come to Wake, they get coached up, they get bigger, they get stronger, and by the time they leave here, they're really good quality ACC football players. But at the same time, at a place like Wake, they've got to be all squared up academically. They've got to be able to do the schoolwork. And so that's the type of kid that Dave Clawson goes after, and I think he understands that because he was that kind of guy himself. I mean, he, again, has an academic background. He's a guy that's not going to be outcoached. I mean, you might beat Wake Forest, but you're not going to outcoach Wake Forest in too many instances. He just is one of those types of people who doesn't miss anything. Very well prepared Wake Forest will be under him, and he's also settled into the community as well. I mean, he's a guy that's just a good human being, a strong family man, and he's, again, just all the way around in every facet, just a perfect fit, I think, for Wake. And I can't imagine there's a Wake Forest fan out there that's not just thrilled that he's locked up through 26 with that new contract. So right man, right time, and the Deacs will try to get into a fourth bowl game and win it in a row here, which has never been done at Wake.
Let's jump back into football. Let's take a look at special teams. Both the place kicker and punter are back. Consistency is always a good thing. But who is likely to replace the aforementioned Greg Dortch as the return man?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm not sure that I have an answer or the Deacs have an answer yet. We'll see. I think, you know, Wake's got good team speed. They've got several kids to pick from there, and we'll just see how fall camp shakes out. But I think Wake will be fine there. They've got plenty of guys. You know, they can use a running back or two or some wide receivers, whatever, some defensive backs. And, you know, but Dortch had some terrific wiggle in him. There's no question about it. You know, maybe even Kendall Hinton. I don't know. I mean, he's, you know, we talked about him with the ball in his hands before too. So we'll see. But I think that's one of those things right now that's probably up in the air. A lot of guys will get a chance, and then we'll see in the end you know, who's back there on kickoffs and punt returns.
All right, let's jump over to defense now, where it appears things have settled in at coordinator. We'll start with the defensive line. Stopping the run, not so much of an issue, but how about pass pressure? And what do you see out of Basham, Whaler, Johns, and McCollum?
Well, I really like Boogie Basham. He's a guy that's you know, played a lot of football now, and he's going to be kind of a featured guy in that spot. And he's got all the tools. He really does, and he's a guy that's, again, himself developing, coming along, understanding what it takes to play at this level and play effectively. And so I think he'll be fine in leading that group. And you know, Wake's got some issues there depth-wise, but I think they've got enough players, you know, barring a lot of injury, that they're going to be fine. And there's no question that Basham leads the way.
Let's look at the backs. Taylor, Bassey, Henderson, Williams, Smenda. Tell us a little bit about what they're bringing to the game this season.
Well, Wake's going to be really good on the corners, Amari Henderson and Isang Bassey. And I think Bassey probably is going to get a lot more of the press than anyone, and probably justifiably so. He's a terrific player. I think really, really gets it, understands what it takes to be there. He's a guy that'll take some risks, and sometimes at corner especially, that can cost you. But they'll have him coached up pretty good, and I think you'll see a lot of big plays from him and Henderson. The Deeks, you know, lost some snaps at safety, so they'll be looking at different players there. I think Luke Masterson is a guy that will play some safety, probably play some linebacker. He may be, you know, he started his career as a defensive back, and then last year, because of injury, was forced into linebacker, and he may stay there, but they may drop him back in different situations to play some safety too. So, you know, that's where that safety spot, that's where we'll see a lot of experiments probably in fall camp. And I think that's a wide open competition right now with a lot of names to choose from, and we'll see how things go. But of that group, I don't think there's any question that Bassey's the guy that most people look to kind of lead the way.
Let's look at the schedule, Stan. The Deeks start this season off with Utah State, a good challenge. They shake off some rust, calm opening day nerves. It's not a cakewalk, though, so this game will speak volumes about what they'll bring to the table in the ACC. Third week, North Carolina. Fifth week, Boston College. Not to dismiss any opponent, but the first big challenge may come October 19th against Florida State. Then you'll see NC State, Virginia Tech, Clemson, and wrap up the season with Syracuse. Tell us about what you see in this schedule and the challenges.
Well, I think certainly the last month's going to be a huge challenge. Virginia Tech on the road, Clemson on the road, Syracuse on the road. The only home game in the last four is a game with a really good Duke team. So that last month's going to be brutal. So I think for Wake, it better get some hay in the barn there to start. You mentioned Utah State right out of the chute. They've got a terrific quarterback, a guy's going to play in the NFL. That is not going to be an easy game. And then Wake's got to go on the road to Rice. And then an interesting game with Carolina. It's a non-conference game, and kudos to the Deeks and the Tar Heels for getting that done. You know, with the expansion of the ACC, Wake and Carolina don't play every year, and so they just got tired of not playing, and it worked up a non-conference game, so that'll be a lot of fun. And you know, that early game with Boston College you mentioned, that too is on the road, so it's going to be tough for Wake before they get into that three-game home game stretch with Louisville, you mentioned Florida State, and then NC State right behind that. So I think for the Wake fans, it's a great home schedule for the first time ever in Winston-Salem. Wake's got the other big three schools, Carolina, NC State, and Duke, in Winston-Salem. That's never happened in Winston-Salem before. So Deke's going to set a little history there. And I think it's, you know, obviously a great thing for Wake fans to be able to have the other big four at home. So it's a challenging schedule. I think it's an interesting one from a lot of different perspectives, and one that hopefully, again, as I mentioned briefly before, the Deeks can find a way to get into a bowl game for the fourth straight year, which has never happened at Wake, and then win a fourth consecutive bowl game, which has never happened before. So some history could be made here in 2019. I'm sure Coach Clawson and his staff are counting on that, and certainly that's the goal.
With that, we're going to wrap up our time with Stan Cotton, the voice of the Wake Forest Demon Deacons. And thank you, Stan. We appreciate you giving us an insider's preview of Wake Forest football.
My pleasure, Jim. Anytime.
Coming up in just a few moments, former Pitt quarterback and color analyst Pat Bostic is joining us. Just a quick heads up. Our interview with Pat occurred before the injury of Rashad Weaver. The Panthers were depending on the seasoned defensive end who suffered a torn ACL in practice last week. Sticking with football, our first true NFL preseason games are finally out of the way. Well, the Vikings, how'd things go for you? And I understand you got a new kicker who's also pretty good at punting, at least from the standpoint of 50 yards or better.
Mm-hmm. In fairness, I did not get to see the game on Friday night. My wife's grandmother turned 93 on Friday, so we were over with her having dinner. But I know they did win. They beat New Orleans, which, you know, I like beating New Orleans. They're one of my least favorite. Well, the team is good. They're probably my second most hated or disliked fan base in all of the NFL behind Philadelphia. But what stood out to me in the things I did notice is that first team offense looked pretty good. Kirk Cousins played well. The backup player, they ran the ball well. Adam Thielen had a really nice catch that set up a touchdown. It was a short, it was over 30 yards, and he like basically went. But it was a very you'll have to go see the highlight. He basically like kind of I don't even know how he caught it, but he did. It was pretty impressive, and you know, obviously you can only take so much out of preseason because you're only getting maybe a series with. Especially early on with the first team, if they're playing at all. And I know on the other side, Drew Brees didn't play, which I understand that. And, you know, it's first preseason game. Maybe you really start ramping it up in games 2 and 3.
Yeah. But, start weeding out the extraneous. So you got to go down to 53 by the by the fourth game. So that's, but in between now and then, it's fun to watch some of the young guys and some people who may not ever have a career get an opportunity to get out on the field and do something fun. Mm-hmm. I thought from the standpoint of offense, I couldn't tell you anything other than it was a very short series because Matt Nagy is one of those coaches who just says, you know what, I'm not putting my guys out there and tempting fate because we got a big game. To kick off the season against Green Bay, and we want to win that with full, you know, and he did the same thing last year. So, but there was a couple opportunities. Saw Roquan Smith looks dastardly on defense. They are really upping their defensive attack, and if that continues through the season, man, offenses are going to have a heck of a time against the Bears. David Montgomery, new running back, looked pretty good too, so that was fun. You brought up the this team, this fan base, and you tweeted about yet another brainless group of slugs in Philly who attacked a Titans fan. Eagles fans, you really do have one of the worst reps in the NFL. I tapped into a thread regarding that incident, and more than a few comments which I am not going to endorse. We're about declaring an all-out war, and I'm going to call this Eagles fans, visiting their stadiums. That would just, you know, that would just ruin everything for everybody everywhere. So don't let a couple of lunkheads who are ruining one stadium turn into everybody having a bad experience. What is up with Philly and that whole, you know, it's a mindset, man. It's crazy. It really is. And this is not new. This is something that's been going on for a while, right?
Yeah, and I had a guy when that tweet you mentioned, I had a guy who's a Vikings fan but lives in Philly. He told me that he went to there was a game the year it was like 2016, he went to a regular season game between the Vikings and Eagles, and he was just kind of wearing neutral colors. He wasn't wearing a Viking stuff. He said he had to leave at halftime. He just didn't feel safe there.
Yeah, that's such a shame. You know, I will tell you that
That particular grouping of teams. Now, I've only been to I've been to three stadiums in Washington, Philadelphia, and New York. Haven't been to Dallas. I just found that, you know, and this, I hate to say this, man, but God, the fan bases there are obnoxious as all get out. One of the best experiences that I've ever had, Carolina Panthers, nicest people in the world. Sat there with my colors on for the opposing team, sat down next to a guy who's been there forever and a day, and got into this great conversation, and we were talking about football, you know? Mm-hmm. We were cheering for our teams, but we were talking football and just enjoying the day. And so, and I, you know, a couple other places that I've been that have been the same way. Mm-hmm. You go and it's a fun experience. But I you know, from a baseball standpoint, I used to go to Baltimore and Ballmer and hit the O's, specifically when the Yankees were in town. Because my dad was a Yankees fan, and, you know, it's one of those things. Well, you know, I like the Birds, and he liked the Yanks, so we'd go, right? And it always seemed like we were around a bunch of obnoxious Yankee fans. You know, yeah, it just takes the fun out of it. It really does. Mm-hmm. You know, so I just sat there and watched. So. Mm-hmm.
It's like you're almost better off just not wearing anybody's team color. Just show up wearing random clothes and just hope you don't... you know, get attacked.
Yeah. Somebody's going to get really hurt that way. And, you know, that's going to be a shame. Hey, keeping us in the football mode, big game coming up, Miami Hurricanes against Florida Gators. Week zero, where they came up with that, that was pretty lame. I see some things in regard to the Gators that almost has me picking Miami. And I said almost. By the way, we'll be debuting the 2019 picks and power poll on Monday the 19th. Be looking for that. We're going to find out what Will thinks and if he can roll like he has in the many years past as kind of leading the way with his picks. We had a pretty good percentage last year, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you would expect anything less, but lots of good word coming out of ACC camps. We'll take some up with a grain of salt, but reading between the lines, the season looks promising. Hearing stuff out of NC State, North Carolina, Boston College. I've heard some things out of Notre Dame, too, that, you know, of course, that's outside of ACC, but all very promising stuff, and that's good. Now, there are a couple of teams that you're not hearing much of anything, and that's kind of worrisome. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, well, depends on the situation too. I mean, you know, there are teams that are, you know, going through the motions right now as they get ready for their first game. And you just mentioned, you know, Pitt lost one of their top returning defensive players already with a season-ending injury. Yeah. I know Virginia Tech just had a wide receiver enter the transfer portal, but I think a lot of people are saying that's more because he got passed up more than anything. There's a player that's getting a lot of buzz in these late summer camps, and yeah, I think that's going to be a very interesting team because it's just a team that, you know, you look at all the attrition. I've laid out all the reasons for it, but people are starting to wonder at the same time if there really is a problem with the culture there. And you got to look at, you know, especially going after this season with Bud Foster, you know, retiring, who's going to be the guy to replace the guy?
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to make any quick moves there, that's for sure. But they'll,
oh no,
you know, that gives them a year to at least come up with something. The coaches poll has Clemson at number one with 59 first place votes. That's part of the reason why, as we have seen on social media, that Clemson has rent-free space in Paul Feinbaum's head. Notre Dame is at number nine, Syracuse at number 22. Then in the receiving votes category, it's Miami, Virginia Tech, Virginia, NC State, Duke, Boston College, and Florida State. So at least, you know, some recognition. I have a problem with only two ACC teams, true, you know, conference teams. Of course, with Notre Dame, it's number three. But only two ACC teams being in the top 25. I really believe that people haven't been taking a very close look. And every time we have an interview and we get in depth about who's returning, how many people are returning, there's a lot more depth, seasoned experience coming back this year than there has been in quite a while. And last year, yeah, it was a down year. Okay. I'm not buying into this. And so when the CBS Sports 130 came out, I was encouraged because they have Clemson at number one, Notre Dame at 10, Syracuse at 20, Virginia at 21, Miami at 23. Florida State is at 38, Virginia Tech 40, NC State 41, Pitt 47. I feel comfortable with that. And especially those teams that are in the top 25. I think they're deserving of being there at the beginning of the season. I don't think they're too high. I don't think they're too low. Especially Syracuse, Virginia, and Miami. I think all three of those teams should be in there. Florida State, if they can pull off some things this year, and they're very close to doing it at 38, if they have a good start to their season, first two games, they'll end up in that top 25. Virginia Tech has to do the same thing. NC State could do the same thing. We're talking their defense really looks great. I mean, a lot better than it has. Pitt at 47, they're going to have to work their way in there. What are your thoughts on these two polls and how they have teams lined up?
I would like to go back to what you said about Clemson living rent-free in Feinbaum's head. You know, shouts to our friend Matthew for that. Check that out at the All Sports discussion. That was a great point.
Yes,
because there is a lot of truth to that with everything he keeps saying. But you know, it's also great for Clemson because you know more pub for the ACC. Again, I'm not quite as high on Syracuse as everybody else has been. I've laid out the reasons why. I'm higher on Virginia for you know the reasons I've mentioned why, and you know through some of these interviews, I you know the voices of seriously done here, and you know just some of them have only you know strengthened my beliefs in them, especially with the one with Miami, because whoo man, I have never heard a play-by-play guy just be as blunt about a situation as I heard with him talking about the quarterback situation and some of the other stuff too.
Yeah.
It was on the offensive line, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very straightforward. And I have the utmost respect for Joe for doing that. I mean, he was very straightforward. He's very seasoned. He knows what he's talking about. And that's a lot of the reason I've been listening very carefully. And you know, some of the conversation that I've had with the guys who have joined us has not been recorded. Mm-hmm. And so that's an extra tidbit for me to put in the back of my head. And I'm finding that I think that their opinions are spot on. They're not going to blow a lot of smoke because they know better, right? But they know the team. And in that particular instance, you know, Joe pointed out something that I think was truthful. We're not used to hearing that, but the truth sometimes, as they say, hurts. So,
And like looking at, and he's right though. I mean, you look at it from that, but they probably have like a 10-win defense and maybe a 4-win offense. So you figure the defense is going to win them some games they probably had no business winning throughout the season. But you know, he talked about that quarterback situation and. I feel zero. I have no confidence in any of them just by the way he's talked.
Well, we're going to find out here really soon, aren't we? The AP preseason top 25 is coming out in another week. It will be intriguing to see if the voters are doing their homework. You know, I've always complained about this. It's that, oh, let's go on what that you know happened last year and the players that were lost. That is a stupid way to look at voting. And I think the argument about waiting a couple of weeks in to begin, you know, a true vote, a top 25, is a lot more accurate. However, that's not the way the system works, and it's not going to change. Now, aside from football and basketball, what college fall sports are you most excited about? Is it cross country, field hockey, soccer, or volleyball?
You know, I'm just really excited with this ACC network. I'm going to have more of an opportunity to watch this stuff, these games. I know I'm kind of interested to see what soccer holds. That's probably the one I would be most interested to see. I think this is probably one of those better, you know, those up and coming type of non-revenue sports, and the ACC has been strong in it for forever, and getting, you know, the network launch, and either have the opportunity to have these games on, and that'll only help, you know, especially in recruiting and, you know, and everything that leads to that.
If you haven't seen the latest United Soccer Coaches preseason poll for men and women, you should check that out at accnation.net. Hey, speaking of all of these sports, this is the week for making a decision for people when it comes down to the ACC network. If your provider hasn't announced they are adding it, I would recommend the following: cutting the cord, heading to providers that are providing it. And if you do it this week, you should have everything in place to watch the kickoff of the network. I'm not going to miss that. I am so excited about seeing that, and especially after they debuted the studio and the folks, and they came out and they had that nice little teaser, I guess, of what was coming. Mm-hmm. Very cool. You know, and the funny thing was, I wasn't looking at the screen when Collinsworth came on. I'm thinking, what's the old man? The old man switched over? What? He sounds just like his dad.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, but I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And it was announced this week that YouTube TV is picking up ACC Network. So there's another streaming option that will help. And, you know, I think Comcast is one that still doesn't have it. And I feel like there's a couple others that still don't have the network.
Yeah, it's small, but a couple. Yeah, I think it's Spectrum and Comcast. Yes. Xfinity. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All I can say to you folks who run those, I get it. You got business decisions you got to make, and quite frankly, Disney and ESPN are hardball negotiators. But you're going to be missing out on a lot of people because, you know, a lot of people want this. They're really looking forward to it. They're fired up. They want it. And they are more than willing to say, I'm cutting the cord and going someplace else. So don't add at your own peril is the only thing I can say there.
Exactly.
Can Pat Narduzzi keep last year's momentum going? We continue the Voices of Football preview with Pat Boston, color analyst of the Pitt Panthers. Pat Narduzzi returns in his fifth year as head coach. The Panthers won the ACC's Coastal Division in 2018, and there's a new offensive coordinator in town. Pitt lost some role players from last year's group on offense and defense and can look forward to tight matchups on their schedule. Let's jump right in here on the offense. Pat Bostic, a freshman quarterback in 2007 that was called upon to take the reins. Let's use that, Pat. Let's look at another freshman in Kenny Pickett, who in 2018 walked the walk. Tell us, through your experience and what you've observed, what are your impressions of Pickett?
You know, I think he has a lot of ability. Last year was an up-and-down year for him, his sophomore season, his first year as a full-time starter. And, 2017, he played the last two games, started and beat Miami in the finale of 2017. As a freshman, Miami was number two in the country, and it obviously rode that into the offseason, had a lot of hype and fanfare coming into the year. And, I think he performed inconsistently last year, but the ability he has and the physical prowess, he's able to run the football, plenty of arm strength. I thought last year, Pitt's run-heavy offense put him in some situations where he had to kind of be a game manager, and I'm not sure that's really his style. I think he's a guy that benefits from being in a rhythm and needing to throw the ball and being a part of the run game. I think Mark Whipple, the new offensive coordinator, will utilize those talents, and I expect him to have a big year. I think he's a guy that can really surprise some folks and, be in the race to be an all-conference type player.
Tell us a little more about the other quarterbacks that are on the roster as well behind Pickett.
You know, they have, I think they have a really good room. You look at some of the young talent they've developed. You know, Nick Patty is another kid from New Jersey, like Kenny, who's going to be their number two. He is about 6'2", a kind of a gamer type, a little bit of a three-quarter release. but finds a way to get it done, can move, extends plays, had a really good spring. You know, he'll be a redshirt freshman this year. Jeff George Jr., son of Jeff George, obviously the quarterback, played for the Colts and in the NFL for a number of years, who's transferred around a little bit, started Illinois, played some there, and then went to Michigan for a hot second before transferring to Pitt last year. You know, currently is a walk-on, but will be their third-string quarterback, and brings some experience to the room and a veteran presence. Really like a young quarterback they have in Davis Bevel, who was a four-star recruit out of South Carolina, right out of the heart of ACC country. And he was 6'5", long, big arm, and he's really raw. But Mark Whipple, I can tell from just talking to him, loves the ability there. And, you know, Davis Bevel looks to be the quarterback of the future. So they've got kind of all parts. They've got, you know, season, you know, returning starter. They've got a, you know, a young backup that is a lot like that starter, a veteran there, and then a kind of a prodigy for the next 3-4 years. So I think that room's in really good shape. And last year you were holding your breath. If Kenny went down this year, not quite as much.
Well, we've talked a little bit about Mark Whipple, Kenny Pickett, how he progressed, and what appears to be a wide receiver and tight end roster that is full of experience is where we're going to go next, and depth, too. So are we looking at an air attack this fall? And tell us more about the wide receiver core.
Yeah, Jim, I think we are. I think that's one of the reasons that Pat Narduzzi knew he needed to make a change. Obviously, the results last year in the passing game were all over the map and largely ineffective. But knowing that you lose two senior tailbacks in Quadri Olison and Darren Hall, and the you know, the bulk of your offensive line that was a road grader type of offensive line, you know, you knew you're going to have to be different, a little bit more finesse, maybe a little bit more up tempo. And I think Mark Whipple brings that. He's a guy that's traditionally wanted to throw the ball, and they're going to have to do it. I think they're going to need to run the ball to keep people honest, and Pat Narduzzi wants to run it. But the passing game is going to be ultimately, I think, what dictates the potential of this team and whether they reach it. I love the receiving core. I think it's highly underrated. To your point, you know, you've seen and obviously done your research and seeing that there is some depth and experience there. Maurice French has been a dynamic playmaker for them, not only in the receiving core, but obviously in the return game. I think he's a guy that can be a focal point of this offense. Taysier Mack last year was, you know, led the country in yards per reception, led the league in yards per reception, was banged up a little bit early in the year, but had some big games and made some really big plays. He's a bona fide, you know, deep target for them and a guy that can take the top off and win 50-50 balls. Complementing that group, I think, is a number of different types of receivers. You know, two young guys in Dontavius Butler-Jenkins and Shockey Jacques-Louis, who are both, you know, Florida kids, can really run. Butler-Jenkins is as polished a receiver as they have top to bottom, and Shockey can fly. So there's two young guys. Trey Tipton's a guy that's been banged up his whole career but had a great spring. He's a senior. He's a veteran. And you couple him with Aaron Matthews, is another guy who's played a lot of football. So they've got every, you know, shape and size. They've got young and old. And two guys in French and Mac that I think are, again, all conference type players that will show that this year and will have a chance to really be focused, you know, a focal point. And then the tight end group has been interesting. You know, they've lost a number of kids at that position over the years to transfer, and a couple kids that ultimately I think moved to tackle that are just too big, quite frankly. But they got a transfer in Nakia Griffin from Rutgers, who is a you know, big guy, played a little bit in the Big Ten, played quite a bit rather, and is a guy that can do both run and pass, which they're going to want to do. But they need to have, you know, quarterback-friendly targets that receiver at that tight end position. And between him and Will Gregg, who's another transfer from last year from Arkansas, I think they've got that. I think they've got two guys that can flex out, win down the middle of the field, and can give Kenny Pickett kind of a safety blanket when he's not able to stretch the field to find that tight end over the middle or sitting over the ball or running a quick out route.
Just a moment ago, you briefly touched on running backs and the offensive line. We'll get to the line here in just a moment. Davis, Carter, Sibley, lots of talent at running back, though there's a lack of experience, at least the college level. Tell us a little more about the backfield.
Yeah, you know, it's a good group. I like it. I think it's I think they're deeper than they've been there. Andrew Powell's a veteran coach that's recruited that position really well. you know, we've never been short of tailbacks at Pitt, and I don't think we are now. A.J. Davis will be the, I think, more the every down guy. He's a guy that's at least sort of group shifty guy, but he's 225 pounds, you know, can move the pile, can turn a 1 yard gain into a 4 or 5 yard gain. Not going to necessarily take the, hit the home run ball, but he can be, you know, a guy that is a base downs back for them that can catch it as well. Kind of Sibley's a power back. He will snap your neck back. He's a third and short goal line guy, and is blocked really well. So that's what they need from him. And then you get into a slew of guys that I think are have the ability to be slashers and game changers. Malik Carter is, in the short time we saw him last year, which was basically the latter half of the year, you know, exercising the ability to test that red shirt and see whether or not he needed to go over that game threshold. Ultimately did, but he was a jet sweep guy, had a huge game against Duke. He's got speed, quickness, and now that he's got a home at position, I think he's a guy that, you know, when you get into passing situations, is going to be a matchup nightmare for defenses because of his ability to win the open field. You know, Mikhail Salahuddin is another guy that's a slasher, was a big recruit out of D.C., coming off a knee injury, seems to be putting the pieces together, and is another guy that can take the top off and hit the home run ball down the, you know, down the if he's able to break the line of scrimmage. So I like the group they have. I think it's full of different types of players and talent, but ultimately they got to be dependable, and they got big shoes to fill. Darren Hall and Quadri Olsen. It's not often you get two guys to rush for 1,000 yards in a year, and it's a big hole, but I think they'll fill it by committee.
Without an effective offensive line, there is no game. Center Jimmy Morrissey returns to anchor this line. There's a transfer from Michigan, but much like the running backs, maybe a little bit of a lack of experience. What's the solution? Or better yet, who's the solution, Pat?
Yeah, I think it's another group that you lose some experience, for sure. I mean, you lose 4 seniors up front, from left tackle, left guard, right tackle. But I think that group and fit what they wanted to do in years past, which was to pound the ball and run it and churn defenses. Now I think they have a longer, more athletic group of offensive linemen in the like of Carter Warren, who's 6'6.5", 310 pounds, has a 7-foot whatever wingspan, can play in a 2-point stance. Gabe Hoy is another guy that can, you know, play the right tackle position that is long and athletic. I think there'll be more of a zone offense, you know, in this 2019 version. A little bit maybe more of a read zone as well. See him more in the shotgun. You know, the guard position, they've got some guys that have played a bit. Bryce Hargrove stepped in last year. When Morrissey went down, they bumped Dentino to center. So you had Bryce Hargrove playing quite a bit at the left guard spot. So he's played 6-7 games and started. And then, you know, Nolan Ulizio is a transfer from Michigan who they brought in who can be an instant guy to play either guard or tackle. So, you know, Dave Borbély was a godsend for this team last year in terms of shoring up that offensive line. Got that run game to be very potent. This year he's got a different group of characters, and I think there'll be a different look. Ultimately, they got a season, and they got to go from, you know, non-starters to cemented starters in training camp and be ready to go August 31st. But I like the talent on paper for sure.
From a distance, Pat Narduzzi strikes me as a straightforward, hard-nosed, take-no-prisoners kind of coach. Just who is Pat Narduzzi?
You're not far off. He is he's intense. You know, defensive background, it's been well chronicled. The players absolutely love him. He is perfect for the city of Pittsburgh in western Pennsylvania. Grew up in Youngstown. It's only 45 minutes away. He embodies what Pittsburgh is, which is toughness and intensity, grit. Kind of embodies the underdog mentality. You know, you don't have the 5-star blue chip recruits, but we're going to find a way to give you heck and try to beat you. And I think he's brought a culture to this program that is, you know, year 5, you know, that locker room has never been better. He cares about his players. You won't find a player that says a bad word about him. And, but ultimately, you know, he holds you accountable. And this program is in great hands. I think obviously the results have been somewhat mixed, but trending in the right direction, and recruiting has taken off. His staff's never been better. First time head coach 4 years ago when he took this job. I think in year five, he understands who he is better, and you know, we're sure happy to have him here in Pittsburgh. I think this year has the potential to be a year where we see the fruits of all the labor.
So you talked about recruiting just a moment ago. The Rust Belt has always been kind to defensive recruiters. What's the biggest challenge on the trail in selling recruits on Pitt?
Well, you know, you're in an area up here where, not unlike a lot of parts of the country, but the Rust Belt, Ohio, Pennsylvania, even into Jersey, Philly, D.C., Maryland, you know, you've got how many Power Five schools within a 100-mile radius? So, you know, obviously here we compete a lot with Ohio State and Penn State, up to Syracuse, Virginia Tech, Maryland. There's just a lot of schools within this area that want to come to Pittsburgh and get the best. You know, when you mentioned Rust Belt, it implies the steel town and the steel industry. That obviously has changed quite a bit over the last 25 to 30 years. So I think I would say the quantity of recruits that come out of Pittsburgh and greater Western Pennsylvania is probably lessened. But the quality, the high end, they're still really good players here. So from a recruiting perspective, you try to fence your backyard in as best you can and get the right kind of kids. But, again, you're going to have Notre Dame coming in here and Ohio State and Penn State, Michigan. So you've got to put yourself in a position where if the young man wants to stay home, which isn't always the case, they feel great about it. But at the same time, where I think Pat Narduzzi has grown – and allowed things to sink in are in some of those areas where the quantity of recruits is far greater. States like New Jersey, Georgia, Florida, where obviously you're competing against the best of the best there as well, in Florida and Florida State, Miami and the like, but there's a bigger crop. It's a bigger pond. So I think that's where we see guys like Malik Carter come through, AJ Davis, Shockey Jacques Louis, guys that are three, four-star kids that are from that Dade, Miami County, Dade, Broward County area that can just flat out play ball.
Let's go over to defense now. Let's take a look at the starting 11. They look, frankly, pretty solid. Let's start off with the line, and we'll work our way back. Rashad Weaver, Patrick Jones, Amir Watts. Tell us more about what we're going to be facing on that front line.
It's a great transition because Charlie Partridge is the coach of that group, former head coach at FAU. Worked with Brett Bielema, both Wisconsin and Arkansas. He has recruited Florida extremely well, and he's got, I think, the most talented position group on his team, and they'll be an anchor. Rashad Weaver is he's a kid that probably has a chance to get drafted this year after his junior year. He's 6'6", long, smart. He gets a 4.0 student. He's a honor society kid, but he's mean. He's angry. He plays the game the right way. And he can do things from a three-point stance at a nine technique position that not a lot of guys I've seen can do. You know, a jet sweep coming from the opposite side, he's able to make the play. He understands tendencies. He studies film. He's a leader of this defense, and he's bookended by Patrick Jones, who had a breakout year last year. And I think you'll have a chance to see him benefit from the attention that Rashad gets this year. And cement himself as a starter. It reminds me of when I played, you had Jabal Sheard, who's played quite a bit now, obviously for the Colts and Patriots and Browns. The other side was a guy named Greg Romeus, who was also drafted. You got two guys that are 6'5", 6'6", on either side at the end. But you can't just vice a tight end on both of them. You're going to have to pick your battles. So I like that group. And then inside, they're deep, really deep inside. Watts, Camp, Jalen Twyman's a kid from D.C. that's, you know, 300 pounds now and is – it's just he's a menace. And then they've got some other guys, young guys inside that have promise. So, you know, Pat Narduzzi's 4-3 quarter style defense depends on getting pressure on the quarterback from your front four. This is probably honestly the best front four he's had in his time and the best chance they have to be that Michigan State-esque defense that our fans have wanted to see since he got here. But I think they finally have the parts in place.
The one spot that I did come up with a question mark on was linebackers. Let us know a little bit more about what we can expect there.
I think it's a question mark for sure. You know, they've got some guys that have played. Obviously, Salim Brightwell's played a lot of football, had a big pick against Clemson when we beat him a couple of years ago that he nearly took back to the house. But he's played every spot on that defense. He's a veteran. He's a hitter. I think he could play either Mike or weak side inside. Nice Reynolds was a guy that filled in for Quentin Wirgenis last year. When Wirgenis went down, he was having an all-conference type season, but tore his ACL. Reynolds is a kid from Brooklyn that will stand you up in the hole and runs better than he may look like he does, but he's battled some injuries and needs to stay healthy. Chase Pine, big recruit, beat Virginia Tech for him. He's 6'4", can fly, can play rush end and 3-4. You know, he's a tough kid, played a lot of special teams. So those three right there give you some experience. I think the most talented guy out of the group is a young man out of Ohio named Cam Bright. He's a 4.3 40 kid. He also weighs about 215, can play in space. They moved Phil Campbell, who was a safety, to linebacker. He's 210 pounds, can play in space. What you've seen is, you know, Pat Narduzzi looked to get a little bit more speed at linebacker. I think that's finally what they have, is more athleticism at that linebacker position that can play against teams like UCF and Duke and Carolina, all these spreads you see. You need to have linebackers that still want to stop the run and not only are strong and able to still, you know, fit in the run game, but can play in space against tight ends and slot receivers. I think they finally have. They also picked up a transfer from Florida to add some depth. So it's a question mark for sure, but there's no shortage of capable bodies and talent.
Well, speaking of talent, experience, the secondary has a lot of that. Dane Jackson, Hamlin, Stocker, Ford. Talk to us about who and what on the back end.
Yeah, it's a great group. I mean, I think, again, you talk about Pat Narduzzi's defense and his blueprint, if you will. I think starts with that D line getting pressure, but it's also press outside. It's one-on-one coverage on the corners, and they finally got a group that is fully capable of doing that on every down and distance. And, you know, Jason Pinnock is the other opposite of Dane Jackson. Pinnock, 6'1", long, really played well against Clemson. You know, had four PBUs against Clemson in the championship game, and, you know, obviously locking up some pretty good receivers. But he's a guy that played a lot of ball for him last year. Damari Mathis is a guy that can fit in back there. He's a kid from Florida that can fly. So they've got 3-4 corners that can roll. You know, Marquez Williams is another guy who's a little bit shorter in stature, but speedy and tough. But Dane Jackson's the leader of that group. And then at safety, it's Damar Hamlin. That's his group back there. And a big recruit and really had a great year last year. He's poised to be an all-conference type player, I think. And he's got a young protege in Paris Ford that is, if Rashad Weaver's the veteran leader of this defense, Paris Ford's the kind of the heartbeat. This guy's vocal. He likes to talk. But he's a playmaker. Somehow he finds himself around the football even when he's not supposed to be there. He's just a gamer. And Jazzy Stocker is another guy that's played a lot of football back there. But I think your two safeties are going to be Ford and Hamlin, which will make Pittsburgh folks proud. They're two homegrown kids. And then on the perimeter, Dane Jackson's a local kid, and then Pinnock from Connecticut. You look at that four across the back line, and I think you'd be hard pressed to find a better four in the conference, quite frankly.
Let's take a look at special teams. So we know that the kickoff man and place kicker, Alex Kessman, brings his game. Some questions last year at punting, though things look a little better. Of course, that's relegated to the dustbin of football history. Who's returning those kicks, though? That's the big question, I think, that I had in looking at the roster.
Yeah, no, I mentioned earlier Maurice French obviously had a great year last year returning kicks. I think he'll continue to do that. But they've got some guys also that can step back there and spell him. If he's going to be asked to do more in the passing game, I think obviously something's got to give. I think they'll use him in spots to return kicks, but he's dangerous. But Malik Carter's a guy that can return kicks and punts and is a weapon with the football in his hands. Paris Ford can return punts and kicks at times. He's just flat out slippery sometimes. Special teams, you know, feel pretty good about it. Feel a lot better this year than we did last year. I will say that. You know, Kessman had a really good year. He's drilled some long kicks, some of the longest in college football, and has been consistent, confident guy. Kurt Christodoulou is an Australian young man that came in here last year, and it kind of was baptism by fire, or probably actually rain. When we played Penn State, he was holding and had a hard time catching not only punt snaps, but extra point and field goal snaps. So I'm not sure we'll be seeing him holding anymore, but he was most improved last year in terms of his production, punting the football. Huge leg, and he brings a lot of experience, and good experience, both good and bad, but he's learned some valuable lessons coming into his second year as a starting punter. So feel really good about his special teams. Andre Powell's done a great job, not only with the running backs, but with special teams, and I think they'll be much more of a strength this year than they were last year.
Let's look at the schedule. You open the season with Coastal Division rival Virginia in what will be a telling game for both the Panthers and the Cavaliers. 2 weeks later, in-state rival Penn State. That's always fun. Then UCF and a run of challenging ACC games. Give us an idea of what's in store for the Panthers this season.
You mentioned that. I mean, I don't think there's any – you're not going to find out faster who you are than you will this year. You're playing a team that was just picked by the media to win the Coastal. They return a lot. Bronco Mendenhall has done a terrific job there. Bryce Perkins is a dangerous quarterback. Defensively, they return quite a bit. And I think that'll be a very hard-fought, really good football game between two teams that have been on plan in Charlotte come December. So that'll be an interesting one. Come back with Ohio, 11 a.m. kick against them. So that's a game you got to make sure you're ready for. Can't look back to whatever happened the week before, and I certainly can't look forward to Penn State, which will be likely the last game between Pitt and Penn State for some time. It's the last game on the books. And, Jim, you know how those books work. They're scheduled out for a long time. So we're not going to see Pitt and Penn State for a long time. So last year was a whooping in Pittsburgh, and a little bit of a score to settle. And I think that'll be a passionate, hard-fought game, obviously. And then you're right, you get into the league, and who knows? I mean, the Coastals, it's hard to pick. You got teams across the board that have talent back. I think none more so than Miami. They return quite a bit, and we'll see if they're able to figure things out offensively. That was their bugaboo last year. I mean, we played Miami, and then our next game was against Clemson, and I will tell you that this talent-wise and execution-wise and just flat-out skill-wise, defensively, Miami's not that far off from Clemson in terms of what they have. It's their inability to move the football on offense, find a quarterback that they trust. So we'll see if Manny Diaz is able to figure that out with Dan Enos down there. That'll be interesting. Virginia Tech, a little bit of a mystery. Duke, we'll see what they're like without Daniel Jones. Carolina, Mac Brown's in town. We'll see what that looks like. Georgia Tech will be really interesting with Jeff Collins and the transition from the triple option to modern football. I think that will be difficult, but don't doubt for a second that those guys won't be ready to go. And then a crossover game, the game of the year is Syracuse, and who isn't impressed with what Dino Babers has done there? And they return quite a bit up there, and we'll play them up in the Dome. So it's a great schedule. It's a tough one. And, hey, if you put it the right way and you win the games, you can win and put yourself up in that 9-10 win category. You've done a hell of a job, and you put yourself in a position to play in that championship game again.
Well, with that, we're going to wrap up our time with Pat Bostic, color analyst of the Pittsburgh Panthers. Pat, we appreciate your time and giving us an insider's view of Pitt football.
You got it.
Be sure to subscribe to ACC Nation Podcast. Click on our subscription option at accnation.net or join us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, or Stitcher. While you're there, we'd appreciate a rating and/or review. ACC Nation Radio is streaming 365 24/7, and we continue to be added to streaming sites. Don't see us yet? Simply request that we be added. Head to our site to listen in. Follow us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Look for ACC Nation. And, of course, the guys would appreciate a follow on Twitter. Will is at WillsWorldMN, Xavion at XAYVEON, and I'm at ACCTheQ. Always looking to build those numbers. Until next time, cheers.
School.